You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and today I have the great pleasure of chatting with a guy I've gotten to know over this past year. We are hanging out in a mastermind together. I'm learning tons of stuff from him in terms of new ways to position and market a business, your personal brand, the products that you sell, and so much more. Simone Vincenzi, who you might think is joining us from Italy, where he was born, but no, he is in the UK. And I'm going to assume he's also a frequent customer at Berry Brothers and Rudd. Simone, welcome.
I am not, but you're welcome. It's great to be here. I don't even know what Berry Brothers and Rudd is, actually.
Berry Brothers and Rudd, by the way, is like the top wine retailer in London.
Damn, I've been living here for 13 years and I don't know. Berry Brothers and Rudd, I'm going to write it down and go there.
Excellent. Thanks. You should. Well, welcome. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I wanted to chat with you about a little bit of a different approach to marketing, to getting in front of prospects and lead generation for businesses, because we often as business owners think about sort of, you know, typical ways to attract new clients, customers, patients, you know, whether it's doing some advertising or going out and networking, but you take some somewhat different approaches. And I wonder if you can sort of give us an overview of your philosophy on growing a business and attracting folks to that business.
Yeah, I had actually to review my philosophy recently because long story short, I had built a business to about £500,000. Then I had last year, like an emotional breakdown. I was like, I'm done with everything. I want to close down everything. And I don't want to do this anymore. Why am I even doing this? And I think that the pandemic got in the different lockdowns had not a very positive effect on my mental health. And I took some time out. I took some time out just to, you know, look at, first of all, at myself. Who am I? What do I want to do? And then the second part, which was a question that my wife asked me, was, what is your business philosophy? And I had to look back at it and say, I've evolved over the past 10 years of running a business. And this is what I found that actually, I think, is more impactful, that can work. Because, you know, you've been in business for a while and you try 20 different things and 19 don't work. And when you say, actually, that's what I want to do, that's the path that I'm going to follow. So I went through this similar process myself.
So let's talk a little bit about where you are now, but it would be interesting to understand where you were before as well, sort of so we can sort of see that transition. So wherever you want to start is fine.
Yeah, well, I started my business, GTechs, 9 years ago, we've been in business for 9 years. And GTech stands for Growing Together Exponentially. We started as an event company. We were running live events from the first one in a farm with four people to running events with Les Brown for 1,000 people over the years. And I think like the first 4 years of the business, I didn't make any money at all. And then the event with Les Brown really put us on the map. And that was the first year where we had our first six-figure year. And then we kept growing and we kept running events, and that was our bread and butter. And then the pandemic hits. Consider at the point I was doing about 200 live events a year. That was my life, going around, speaking on stage. That's where I felt home. That's what I loved. Pandemic hits. We need to move online. Fortunately, we have been doing stuff online for the past 4 or 5 years, so it wasn't new. We had to just like dial up more in the online work. But it's a complete different dynamic when you're running and you're attracting customers online compared to where all your business is face-to-face. And that's what got me to today. because we were looking at, okay, what are the, some of the most effective things to do online? Because the building relationship online is much harder than in person. And business is a relationship game, whether it's with partners, whether it's with potential clients. And making sales online, it takes way longer than making sales in person. Yes, it's more flexible, but then also it's an environment where everyone is distracted. And so to stand out and to grab attention is way more difficult.
Yeah.
And that's got us to where we are, where I am today.
So, you know, some of the things that I recall when I first met you and before this transition that you're talking about, you focused a lot on public speaking, obviously, you know, the live events, the in-person events, you know, had to go away. But you also were talking about getting noticed by showing up in media, and you focused a lot on that. And I think that's still a piece of what you do, but it's not the entirety of it. So
exactly.
Yeah. So I'm sort of interested in understanding a little bit more about the philosophical approach that you've discovered when your wife asked you that question.
Yeah. As you mentioned before, I was mainly looking at the visibility point of view, which is actually the first part of this business model of the new philosophy, which is visibility is the first pillar. And we are talking about getting seen and getting known in front of other audiences. Now, what happens when a lot of people think about visibility immediately, they start thinking about social media. I need to post more on social media. The reality is that unless you use paid marketing and paid advertisement, the people that are going to see your stuff on social media are only the people that are already heavily engaging with you. Mm-hmm. So you're not reaching new audiences unless a post go viral or you write something controversial and you play some of these games. Then the organic reach on social media, or you have millions of people in your audience, the organic reach of social media is very limited. So we are looking at getting in front of new audiences, and there are four ways in which you can do that. And the first one is association. If you're great at building a relationship, associating yourself with industry leaders or with established brands, then immediately builds your profile and puts you in front of their audiences as well. Then you can use speaking, where you speak on virtual stages or in-person stages, and now you have access to their audience. Or you can use awards. Many people don't use that, but it's an incredible strategy. You can use awards to meet potential partners and potential clients in the rooms, because the award is not what the award does for you. Like, no one really cares about your award. That's the reality.
Mm-hmm. But it's so, who you're going to meet. When you say award, I'm assuming you're talking about like why the Academy Awards or the BANFA, yeah. Why those exist in the first place is really not to honor the people who are receiving the awards, but really to get more visibility for the organization that's giving the award. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's not what talking about. But thank you for asking, because you can use awards as a strategy. Let's say I'm an organization and I create my own awards. Like, I have the GTEx Awards, and they are great to raise visibility, because now more people can apply. So that raises the visibility of the company. But if you, David Baer, you apply and win an award, then that award also raises your visibility automatically in a few different ways. One, people are like, oh my God, great job, well done, awesome. That's the recognition part. But also you're going to connect with the other people that have been finalists, that have been nominated. And the networking that happens in that room, whether it's virtual or in person, and the connection that you can make through that award, they can open a lot of doors and opportunities. And a lot of people never saw it this way.
Right. So it's the application. It's almost like, and I'll go back to wine for just a moment, submitting your wine for review by a publication, right? Go. Then suddenly you show up in that publication alongside other peer wine creators. And then you can, you know, leverage that association that you're talking about. Cool. Okay.
Exactly. That's it. And then the last one on visibility is about being featured on publications. Let's say you like writing, and you have a column in a publication, or you write for another blog, now you have access to their audience. So we have association, speaking, awards, and publications. And somewhere you can choose just one. One that feels more natural to you. That's a great way already to build visibility. And that's what I've been doing for the past 9 years. That's the first pillar, the first part.
You mentioned obviously that you spent a lot of time speaking from the stage. I assume selling from the stage as well. I'm not sure, but we'll get into that. But you also have been very prolific as a writer. You've written and your work has appeared in a bunch of notable publications as well, like Forbes or Huffington Post or Entrepreneurs. So it gives you that credibility as well. So you're not just teaching this; you're living it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been using all the strategy on the association parts. For example, I did did events with Les Brown. I did events with Gary Vee, Simon Sinek, John C. Maxwell. So that helped a lot building the profile and the brand to get also other speaking engagements. I think I've won about 19 awards. I have a goal to be a finalist for about at least 2 awards a year. That's a goal that I have. Mm-hmm. And then also writing for Forbes and major publications. But I invite everyone to have one primary strategy. And for me, for example, was speaking. Because to be honest, I hate writing. Mm. I just hate writing. I do it because it works. Like someone say, can you write an article? I have these things for Forbes or can you write for Forbes? I'm like, of course. Even if I hate writing, I'll do that. I hire a ghostwriter. I don't care. I'm going to be there.
Yes.
But the primary one, because I think a lot of people sometimes they want to do too much and they get overwhelmed. So I would invite everyone to start with just with one strategy that is more natural to them and then apply that one, whether it's association, whether it's speaking or awards or publications.
Okay. Visibility is just the first pillar, right? I think there's two more. Is that what you mentioned?
There's two more. Okay. There is two more. And these are where I wanted to add when my wife asked this question, because the other part is the element of community. If we look at the most successful brands that there are in the world, what do they have? They all have a community.
Okay.
They all have a community. If you think about Microsoft, they have a community of developers. They have a community of users. If we look at about other coaches and other successful consultants, the most successful one, why are they known? Because they have a community. And I didn't see that this is what I was doing from day one. And I think I'm Italian and I love to bring people together. I just love that.
Yeah.
And so subconsciously I was already gathering a community around us, and that's how we grew our business. It was focusing on building stronger relationships with community members and creating a community-oriented business where the interaction, the focus is less of the relationship between me and the client, but is the relationship between me and the client and the relationship client to client. And that in that element creates a way more successful and sustainable business.
So I want to dive a little bit deeper into the concept of community, because when you say community, I think the first thing that comes to many people's minds is a physical or virtual gathering of the individuals who are part of that community. And, then you said Microsoft, and I was like, well, Microsoft has a community. But as I was thinking about it, there's kind of a variation on this theme, which is affinity or identity as well, that probably, you could expand community into those areas. What's your take on that? Am I on target or off?
You are absolutely on target, because everyone will have a way to create a community which will be different. In some cases, is an aggregation of clients or an aggregation of people that come in a virtual and physical space. In other situation is like, let's take a Microsoft community or the Apple community, if you are using the two opposites, or the Nike community, there are an aggregation of people that they believe in certain values. They have a certain passion for technology, in this case, or Microsoft, and maybe they are developers. So they are common by the fact that they are developer. And what they are doing now is to add value to Microsoft as a company. If you think about all the different independent software that people create for Microsoft, mm-hmm. that are not owned by Microsoft. What Microsoft going open source does is allowing people to contribute to the product. And that automatically creates a community, because now is the members that are engaging with the product.
Okay. I want to ask a question, but I think let me ask this question first, and then we'll talk about the third pillar, because I think the third pillar is actually a feeder for community.
I will go the other way around.
Okay, community is the feeder for the third. I think they can go in both directions. We haven't told anybody.
They can go in both directions. You're right. They can go in both directions.
But here's the question that I want to ask, because I think the first pillar that you talked about, the concept is totally accessible for any size business. Visibility, just getting in front of the people you want to be in front of. Okay. The third pillar, which we probably should reveal, is also a concept that is accessible to most every business.
Yes.
And applicable. The examples that you've been giving with community make it harder for a Main Street business, a small business, to make the connection. But I want to ask you this question, because I remember many months ago, I was looking for some feedback in one of the rooms that you and I happened to be in together. And you shared a story about community that was built around, and I think it was a local restaurant, if I remember.
It was a local organic food shop in Plant Store.
Okay. Can you share that? Because I think that's very instructive in how a small local business can leverage community.
Oh, that's brilliant. The person who owns the shop, which is called Dig This Nursery, and is a plant and organic food store. He told me a lot about business, and I used to work there because I was bartering my rent with working there 2 days a week. And I was staying at his house, and instead of paying rent, I was working 2 days a week in his place. And we clicked, we became really good friends, and I worked in this business. And he was doing something genius. He had one of the busiest shops that they were in the area, and it became one of the top 10 most loved shops in the entire London by the Time Out Guide. And the way he did it is once a year, he would organize a tomato festival. Mm-hmm. So he would get the children with their families coming to his shop and planting their own tomato plants. So the parents would buy their tomato seeds. And by the way, he had his own brand of tomato seeds. They would buy their tomato seeds. And then I would actually water all the tomatoes plants for them until they would grow. And then we had one day where we did this tomato festival, where now the families and their kids were coming and collecting their tomato plants. They were ready for the harvest. And in that day, he used to collaborate with the local businesses, where he did with local vendors. We closed an entire road, we brought in musicians, and everyone in the community had a great time. Mm. That one thing got his shop busy for the rest of the year. Why? Because I'm a parent. You're helping me and my kids. You're creating a special memory for me. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to come back to you at the shop over and over again, because you're creating something for our local community. Now, how does this translate to a small business? Because you're saying, oh, well, I cannot close a street. I'm online. How does this work? The concept of community is when there is a group of more than two or three people. So some communities can be five or six people. That is very tight. So it doesn't have to be huge. But the core concept involves the connection and collaborations between members. So maybe think about the clients that you're going to have. Now, what can you do maybe to create a dinner for them, or to create an online event where some of your clients or potential clients can meet together and collaborate? That's about creating a space where other people can connect, and you are the facilitator of that space. Give them something that they want. And then in that way, now they will build a relationship with you. And because they will build a relationship with you, it's more likely that they are going to buy your product or services when and if they need them. Does it make sense?
It does. It relates very much to a concept that we teach, which is programmatic over delivery, or what we call surprise, delight, and wow. To build into a business, things that your customer would not necessarily expect your business to do, but you deliver, and it's not part of your business. It's sort of an added extra. And that's one of the ways to actually distinguish your business from a competitor's business. But it's also a great mechanism, I think, for getting people to have that affinity, have that, make that deeper connection, which gets them to stick around longer. And that's part of that goal. But I'm sure you have something to say about that, but I want to jump to the third pillar.
And how
I think they're interactive. And so if you want to explain that'd be great.
Yeah. The third pillar is recurring revenues. Now we've been talking about this third pillar for a while. So third pillar is recurring revenues. And I think it was something that we did from the beginning of our company. Even without knowing, we were getting either people on memberships or higher ticket, but paying over a longer period of time with payment plans. And what it did over the years, it actually created a good buffer where, you know, you have 50, 100 people paying anything between £100 to £500 a month, like $100 to $500 a month if you're making it in dollars. That creates a great buffer for the business. And last year, when I basically could barely work for about 6 months, that came very handy. Because it was the first time in my life, since I'm the kind of person that if I want something, I get it. I work my ass off. I don't have any problem just putting my head down and work. But it was the first time in my life that I couldn't do it. I'm 33, so I'm very young. That was the first time that my body and my mind were just not responding. And I was like, what do you do there?
Yeah.
And fortunately, we had a team. Like, we didn't grow as a business, but we didn't shrink. We had a team that was able to take care of the clients. And what allowed us not to, what allowed me also to take that time and that step back is the fact that we had recurring revenues and having a business that was built for it. So everything gets paid. Staff member gets paid. My salary gets paid. We don't have much left because we have breaking even. We've been more than breaking even with our recurring revenues at the moment, but we are not going under. Yeah. And that leaves a lot of freedom.
So there's, as I said earlier, there's a symbiotic relationship between the second and third pillar. And I wonder if you can speak to that a bit.
Yeah, there is absolutely. Because when someone, some people think about, when the moment they think about recurring revenues, they immediately think about membership side. I need to have a membership. No, you don't. Like, as long as you have recurring payments coming in, how these recurring payments are coming doesn't have to be a membership. It can be people that are paying on payment plans. It can be a recurring clients and retainer programs that you are creating. You can be creative in the way you create those recurring revenues. But the more people stick around in the community and the more connections they have, not just with you, but with the other members of the community, then they are less likely to leave. In fact, one of the things that we are really focusing on in our community building strategies is get our members to create deeper relationships. And it's a win-win, because on one side, because of the depth of the relationships, then they get better results, they create friends, they help each other above and beyond from what the program is about. But on the other side, our retention is huge, because people, they don't want to leave their best friends. They don't want to leave the people that they love and they got to know. So now then they keep paying to stay within the community. So that's where the symbiotic relationship happens.
Yeah, I love that. You're very correct in mentioning that, you know, people often will think membership site or membership model for business. And I get this pushback all the time. And as you were just talking about, I was like, I got to come up with some really good examples of where that's not the case. So it's not like a gym or, you know, it's not a fitness center. It's not a membership site online. I thought of, where do I pay on a regular basis? Well, every year we join a CSA, a community supported agriculture, a farm that is not far from us, produces vegetables, and they, we've made a commitment to pay over the course of, you know, 22 weeks, I think, they get payments from us. And in exchange, we get a box of vegetables from them, right? It's a farm share, right? That was one that I thought of immediately. Another one that I thought of is a financial advisor I know who works with young people, young couples, and they can't necessarily afford the, and financial advisors have sort of shifted from taking a percentage of investment to what's called fee only, which is a much more common model now. And so you pay, you know, a few thousand dollars a year. Well, many young couples probably aren't in a position to, right? So what does he do? Well, he sets up an easy, as you described, payment plans. It's really the equivalent of the, you know, $3,500 a year that he might be collecting, but it's amortized over 12 months. It's much more palatable. I can think of a dry cleaner who does the same thing, right? All the dry cleaning you want and pay this amount. We have movie theaters that have, actually, somebody the other day told me that Postmates, one of the food delivery services, you can spend $10 a month, unlimited deliveries, instead of paying on a per delivery basis. Now, they probably have done the math and figured out that most people aren't going to take advantage of that, and they're profitable that way. So there's a ton of different examples of this.
Absolutely. And if you're going into, let's say you have some corporate clients, then you're talking about having a retainer program. My wife has a great, actually built, she had a great service. So she's a host and an MC for events. Mm-hmm. That's her business. So she will go large events, moderate, facilitate, be the face of the event and host, make sure that everyone has a good time and everything runs on schedule. That's her thing. And she works for the biggest events in Europe for that. And one of the services that she came up with, which actually a couple of companies took her on, is that they will, so they, she will get a retainer from an event company. This is an event, a company that organizes events maybe for other corporates. They will have hundreds of events a year. That's their business. They run, manage, and organize events. So now she works as a subcontractor for them. She gets paid their retainer every 3 months. There is a lump sum that gets given, and they have the right to book her for a certain number of days a year. Like, you pay me this amount every quarter, you have the right to book me for this amount of days or amount of hours. You can choose where, you can choose how, just give me some notice and I'll make sure, and you have first refusal, I'm going to make sure that you're going to be the client that I prioritize because of this. For a company that runs 200 events a year, that is always hiring hosts and hiring MCs, they know already they have someone that they trust and they can find and is going to be there for them when they need it. That's another example.
That's a brilliant model. There's a ton more that we haven't learned from you, and we're getting close to running out of time. So I think maybe let's take the next minute or two to learn a bit more about how you serve the clients you serve, who they are, and how folks can find out more about you.
Yeah, we work with service providers, coaches, speakers that they love the idea of having a community business. They love that idea because a community business is not for everyone. It is for someone that loves to create something that goes beyond the service delivery. Like, this is what I do, this is what I deliver, and that's it. And there is nothing wrong with that. Some people just want to say, I want to clock in, I want to do my work, I want to go home. And other people, they want to say, I want to actually create something bigger that also is going to add revenues to my bottom line, but also is going to give to my clients more than they can expect, that wow factor, what you said. And that's the type of clients we work with. We help them get invisible first. Because if no one knows about you, then you can be the best in the world, but yeah, not much is going to happen. So that's the first part. We help them be visible. We help them set up all the system and creating their own community and manage their own community. And then we help them having a business model, which is based on recurring revenues and increase their monthly recurring revenues, whether it's with evergreen models or launch-based models. That's depend on the business that we work with. But that's the spectrum of the work that we do.
And where can folks learn a little bit more about you and follow up with you if they're interested?
Website is gtex.org.uk. So gtex.org.uk.
And of course, we will have a link to that in the show notes as well. Simone Vincenzi, thank you so very, very much for hanging out with me. I know you are a busy man, and I'm glad that we found time on our calendars to connect and have this conversation.
Always, always time for you, David Baer. And thank you for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure.
Indeed, indeed. Folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. Thanks for hanging out with us today, and I hope to see you back here again real soon. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.